Okay, so today we're going to be doing a remake or a reset on the teaching, making the calendar decision. Because if you remember, before we went into the unity and division teaching, we had done the appointed times of Yahweh teaching. And then I said, before teaching about the calendar issue, I first wanted to make sure we covered why it's an issue at all in terms of the unity and division issues and why we have these problems. Because we are going to cover some of the topics that tend to be used for causing division. And one of the main ones that seems to be at the top of the list is the calendar. So what I want to do today is cover some things. Hopefully I'll get it done in just one shot here today. The teaching's called Making the Calendar Decision. And so first I want to cover what we're going to cover and then what we're not going to cover. So we're going to go through, first and foremost, what we're not going to do is we're not going to prove what the right calendar is. I am not here to say, ta-da, I have solved all the mysteries of the universe and I know exactly the right calendar. I am, however, going to explain to you why the choice that I have made, I believe, is the right choice for this time where we live, and when we live, etc. So making a right decision is what I want to talk about as opposed to proving the correct and perfect calendar. All right, so that's what we're going to go through there. We're going to go through the process of understanding the decision-making process in choosing the calendar that you're going to observe, as opposed to getting into the heated debate of trying to prove that my calendar is right and yours is wrong and this is why, et cetera, et cetera. Is that fair? We're all good? Okay, so what is the issue and why is there an issue? So point number one, Yahweh set appointed times to meet with his children. We talked about that in the appointed times of Yahweh teaching. They are scheduled at specific times, and they are a sign of the relationship between him and his people. And Yahweh takes these appointments very seriously. So this is part of why we have an issue, is that we know Yahweh takes these things seriously, and he expects us to take them seriously. So we're all going to get real serious, and we have to get it perfect and right, etc. And that's not a wrong approach. We should be serious, and we should want to get things right. However, some things it seems like he's allowed, and this is my language, I'll use my own language, I call these things gray. Now, by the way, the people that are doing their own research and coming up with their own calendars, they think there's no such thing as gray, it's black and white. The reason I call it gray is that when I've got a huge number of people saying A, another group saying B, and another group saying C, and we could even go to D, E, and F, and G, as far as what this thing should look like, and each one is researched and studied and adamant about their position, that to me is gray. See, we don't have a lot of gray with don't steal. We don't fight about don't steal. We don't fight about don't murder. We don't fight about don't commit adultery. We don't fight about don't covet even. We don't fight about don't make idols. We fight about only certain things that each one sees it very clearly, but yet it's not the same as what the other person sees. And so that's what I'll call the few things that we fight about, I call them gray. For whatever reason, he's allowed it to be interpretable, if that's even a word, you know, subject to interpretation in a variety of ways, where people can be convinced in their own minds and in themselves. And I'm not saying that means they're delusional or something, but they've convinced themselves, they figured it out. Yet, other people have done the same effort and come up with different conclusions. And by the way, let me explain the rest of this, which is each group, and by the way, I've spoken to all of them. Over the years, I've gotten the emails with the 57 attachments and the links to YouTube videos or personal phone calls and offers to show me and demonstrate why their calendar's right and why whatever I'm doing is wrong, etc. Each one, sadly though, thinks that if the other people would just let the word speak for itself, which basically says they believe that the other group is a bunch of unstudied idiots. Well, you know, if they would just let the word speak for itself, it's straightforward, it's simple. Well, each group says that. Okay? Each group says the same thing. And I can promise you, I know lots of people in every possible group or position on this, and they're all very smart. They all study very deeply. They've done tremendous research. And they have integrity that they believe what they've done is correct. And so I don't think we should minimize, mock, or belittle the other group that you're not in, that's on the other side of this. because they've done what you've done. They just came to a different conclusion than you did. But that tends to be the thing, is that I see that there's almost an arrogance, there's almost a haughtiness of, I'm right, you're wrong, I researched, you didn't, or something. But I want you to understand that the calendar issue, as well as these other ones that we may go into at some point that also divide us, the ones that we are split on, but we can't seem to win the argument. Arguing about it ends up being the same thing as trying to convince someone in mainstream Christianity to keep the commandments. They can't see what you see. So the people that are in calendar A cannot see what calendar B says. And calendar B can't see what calendar A or C says. They just can't see it. So you can't change their mind. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've never seen anybody convince anybody to change their position on the calendar. I have not seen it. Okay? I've seen people decide to do some things a little differently for unity's sake, and that's part of the decision-making process that we're going to talk about today, how we make the decision about the calendar. But I've not seen anybody actually convince anybody to change their position. And there's reasons for that, because we get emotionally invested. Okay, we put in time, we put in effort, and then we get emotionally invested in our result. And so what happens is when you get emotionally invested, it becomes almost a part of who you are. In other words, you now identify yourself with your position. By the way, this is why we're having the whole country tear up. The liberals and the conservatives or whatever extremes that are out there are starting to take everything personally because now it's part of who they are. Not I agree with a liberal position or I agree with a conservative position or whatever. I am a liberal. I am a conservative. I am. See, now it becomes personal. So if you reject it, you reject me. And that's where we run into the biggest problem. So I want to help us understand the problems when we deal with issues, and we're going to use the calendar as sort of our template for how this can kind of work out and should work out and why it doesn't. Does that make sense? Okay. So beginning in Leviticus chapter 23, we see in chapter 23, Yahweh says in verse 1, he says, And Yahweh spoke to Moses saying, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, the appointed times of Yahweh, which you are to proclaim, has set apart gatherings. My appointed times are these. And then he goes through and teaches us about Shabbat, Pesach, unleavened bread, wave sheaf, Shavuot, trumpets, atonement, and Shemini Atzeret, the eighth day festival. So that's all laid out here in chapter 23. He says, these are my appointments to be kept by Israel. And now we did a teaching series called Discovering Your Identity, where hopefully you came to the correct conclusion, which I think is the correct conclusion anyway, that you are supposed to be Israel. That everything in this book is about the people known as Israel. Once that's who they were called. Now, of course, Abraham was not Israel. He was before there was an Israel. He was, you know, up the generational timeline there. But once we get to Yaakov and his name gets changed to Israel and we have the 12 tribes, everything moves forward is always about Israel and those that would join themselves to Israel, etc. So he says, these are my appointed times between me and the children of Israel. So now let's go to Exodus 31, and we read this today as part of our liturgy. In Shemot, Exodus 31, with the understanding of the sign, the Vishamru, and we're going to begin here in verse 12. Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, and you speak to the children of Israel, saying, my Sabbaths you are to guard by all means, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations to know that I, Yahweh, am setting you apart. And you shall guard the Sabbath, for it is set apart to you. Everyone who profanes it shall certainly be put to death. For anyone who does work on it, that being shall be cut off from among his people. 6 days work is done, and on the seventh is a Sabbath of rest, set apart to Yahweh. Everyone doing work on the Sabbath day shall certainly be put to death. And here's your Vishamru. And the children of Israel shall guard the Sabbath to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as an everlasting covenant between me and the children of Israel. It is a sign forever. For in 6 days Yahweh made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. Now, we are going to do another teaching called Remember the Sabbath Day or something like that. That's what we called it in the past. And in that teaching, we will cover all things Shabbat including things like the lunar Shabbat or the day-to-day Shabbat or the night-to-night Shabbat and all the other issues about Shabbat. So we're not going to cover that today. So we'll cover that in that teaching. But what we do need to understand is Shabbat, being one of the things listed in Leviticus 23, is an appointed time, so there's a calendar issue going on here. Okay? There's a calendar issue going on here. We're also told in Isaiah 66, Yeshayahu 66, that at the very end of things, and we're going to begin reading here in verse 22, "For as the new heavens and the new earth that I make stand before me, declares Yahweh, so your seed and your name shall stand, and it shall be that from new moon to new moon, from Sabbath to Sabbath, all flesh shall come to worship before me, declares Yahweh." And so there are new moons that are on a calendar as well. And by the way, this is part of the calendar thing, because there's debates not only about how to start the calendar, what month to start in, and what day to start in, or whatever, but there's also issues about the new moon. Is the new moon the crescent? Is it the conjunction? Is it local time when you can see it here where you live? Or is it based on when they can see it in Jerusalem? Is it Colonel Mustard with a candlestick in the library? Is it? It starts to get a little crazy, okay? Because when you start to extrapolate and mix these things together, I didn't even bring into the Aviv and the equinox and all the other things that we're going to touch on later in the teaching here today. But there's so many moving parts and moving factors here. So what we see is, again, this is a serious, important thing. The Sabbath, the new moons. Look at Zechariah 14. Look at Zechariah 14. Okay? And we're going to read towards the end of that chapter in Zechariah 14. And again, this is an end time event. And it says that, "And it shall be," we're going to begin in verse 16, "and it shall be," in Zechariah 14, 16, "that all who are left," so this is after the great and awful day of Yahweh, after the great battle, after Armageddon, so after it's all over, "it shall be that all who are left of all the Gentiles, which came up against Jerusalem, shall go up from year to year to bow themselves to the King, the sovereign Yahweh of hosts, and observe Sukkot. And it shall be that if any one of the clans of the earth does not come up to Jerusalem to bow himself to the sovereign, Yahweh of hosts, on them there is to be no rain. And if the clan of Mitzrayim does not come up and enter in, then there is no rain, and on them is the plague with which Yahweh plagues the Gentiles who do not come up to observe Sukkot, the Feast of Booths." So we see again the seriousness that, you know, in the end of the end of the end, they're going to come on new moons, they're going to come on Shabbats, they're going to come and keep the Feast of Tabernacles, and keep the feasts. All these things are going to come and play into things. So it should be very clear, and I think this is, again, the driving force behind the calendar problem, is that we see that Yahweh is very serious about his days. And he wants us to take them seriously, and he wants us to observe them. Can we all agree? So with that being said, we understand what's driving each person who's figuring out their calendar issues for themselves is that they're wanting to do what's right in his eyes because they realize how serious he takes it. So I'm not at issue at all with the force behind what's causing the problem. I just am saddened that the force that's behind us, which is a good one, is actually causing such problems. And so that being said is that it's funny because there's a lot of people that come into this and they hear about calendar issues like, calendar issues? It never even occurred. How many of you had never even occurred to you that the calendar could ever be a problem? Okay, a lot of you, okay? And so some of you, it came back to, well, you know, what we were taught in Christianity turned out to have so many problems with it. I wonder what else we were lied to about. So let's go dig out everything. And now everything's under scrutiny and everything's under that's being questioned, which is not bad to question things. Because let's understand that if you question something, only three things can happen. Either you find out what you're questioning, that the way you thought about it before was actually correct, so it strengthens your resolve, or you find out it was wrong and you can fix it, or you find out you still can't get the answer and it causes you to dig some more. So really, questioning things is not a horribly bad thing, although you will get attacked for questioning things. Some of you already had that happen when you were in your churches, right? You started questioning things and you got attacked. So we shouldn't attack people for questioning things. And so then what happens is we realize Yahweh's serious about these things. But you know what? I grew up with a calendar that started January 1st. So did you. And then it had things on it like Easter and Christmas. And maybe if you're an American, it had, you know, 4th of July and Thanksgiving or whatever country you live in. It had your secular national holidays on it. But now you're being told about these ones in Leviticus 23 that you didn't necessarily grow up with. Now, of course, if you were Jewish, you did. But otherwise, or lived in maybe a Jewish community, you might have been familiar with it. But otherwise, you wouldn't know about these things. So when are these things anyway? Well, we know in Leviticus 23 that on the first month, on the 14th day of the month, is the Passover. Oh, but when's the first month? On the seventh month, on the first of the seventh month, is trumpets. Well, when's the seventh month? How do we do all of this? So when do we keep these things and which calendar do we use? I mean, because we have a Gregorian calendar. We've got, of course, the Hillel second calendar, which we'll talk about for those who may not be familiar. We've got a lunar solar calendar. We've got an Enochian calendar. We got tons of calendars that we could use. So what are we supposed to do? So how does the calendar work? How does the calendar work? So there are two main calendars in your Bible. There's actually more than that, but there's two main calendars. There's a calendar that we're going to read about in Exodus chapter 12. Let's go there. Let's first understand what Scripture tells us about calendars. In Shemot, in Exodus chapter 12 and verse 1, "And Yahweh spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Mitzrayim, saying, 'This month is the beginning of months for you. It is the first month of the year for you. This moon is the beginning of moons for you,'" is probably what the word would be better translated. "'It is the first moon of the year for you.'" So this is the beginning of counting what? Moons, months. So this calendar that he's talking about here is for counting months. That's the purpose of this calendar, counting months. Now let's take that understanding and go to Leviticus 25. Leviticus 25. And we're going to begin here in verse 1. "Yahweh spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai, saying, 'Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I give you, then the land shall observe a Sabbath to Yahweh. 6 years you sow your field, and 6 years you prune in your vineyard and gather in its fruit. But on the seventh year, the land is to have a Sabbath of rest, a Sabbath to Yahweh. Do not sow your field and do not prune your vineyard. Do not reap what grows of its own of your harvest, and do not gather the grapes of your unpruned vine, for it is a year of rest for the land. And the Sabbath of the land shall be to you for food, for you and your servant, for you, your female servant, and your hired servant, and your stranger who sojourns with you. And for your livestock and the beasts that are in your land, all its crops are for food. And you shall count 7 Sabbaths of years for yourself, 7 times 7 years, and the time of the 7 Sabbaths of years shall be to you 49 years. You shall then sound a ram's horn to pass through on the 10th day of the 7th month." So now it's referencing the moon calendar, as he's trying to now give you a year's calendar. He says, so on the 10th day of the 7th month, which is the Day of Atonement, you're going to cause a ram's horn to pass through all your land, and you shall set the 50th year apart and proclaim release throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It is a Yovel, a jubilee for you. And each of you shall return to his possession, and each of you shall return to his clan. So when are the years counted? The years are counted in the 7th month. We start counting years. It's not when we count months. It's when we count years. By the way, the Jewish community today still does that. They announce a new year every Tishrei 1, which is the first of the 7th month, the month where you would announce the Shemitah and the Yovel. The Shemitah and the Yovel, the year of release and the Jubilee. And so we have a second calendar here. Now, there's some that will make the argument, although I don't see it in the verse, that you're going to blow a trumpet after atonement, telling everybody that the next April or March or when the next year comes, that's going to be the 50th year. Well, why would he tell you to do that? Why wouldn't you just do that next April or March? It's because years counting with the idea of release comes after the whole process and understanding of the meaning of atonement and the day that what trumpets and atonement mean, leading into this idea of releasing. There's a forgiveness, there's a release, there's debt that's dealt with. That's what the Day of Atonement is all about. It is the most appropriate time to be dealing with years of Sabbaths and years of release. So now we have a second calendar here. We have a calendar for months and a calendar for years. So that's why, for all of you that may hear this over the internet, over the future here, because we're coming close now to trumpets, it is absolutely 100% appropriate, not required, but appropriate to call Tishrei 1 Rosh Hashanah. Because in Hebrew, what does that mean? It means head of the year. So in counting years, it is the head. Don't get caught up in the civil, secular thing. Now, it is a civil thing in that it's not an observance to Yahweh. It's an observance for the civil community. It's a release of debt. It's allowing the land to rest. It's all of these things that have to do with more cultural than vertical. So from that sense, it is a civil idea. But it's not something that was invented by the Israeli government because that's just when they happen to decide their fiscal year would be. It's actually scriptural here from Leviticus 25. And so we have a couple of factors here. Now we're trying to figure out what calendar we're going to be doing, how we're going to do this calendar. And we now know, wait a minute, there's two of them. Okay, we got a month calendar and a year calendar. Now it's not that complicated because the year calendar still gets observed within the context of the month calendar, right? Because it's based on the seventh month of the month calendar when you're declaring a change of year. Because I've had people go, well, the seventh month can't be the beginning of the year. It has to start in the first month. Well, Yahweh does things his way. He didn't ask your consultation on it. He didn't ask your permission for it. This is the way he chose to do it. Now, having said that, there are more factors. So what other factors work into this whole calendar thing? How about the signs of the heavens? Let's go back to the very beginning in Genesis 1 and verse 14. So there are other factors that we add into this. And Elohim said, let lights come to be in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night and let them be for signs, for appointed times and for days and for years. So the lights in the heavens have something to do with the calendar because the word there for appointed times is the same word in Leviticus 23. Okay, so these lights in the heavens, something about what's going on up in the sky is connected to your calendar. Because they're there to help us know where we are in the movement of time, which has to do with seasons, signs, days, years, etc. Interesting. So we have these signs. And now we continue that thought and go to Job 38. In Job 38, there's a mention that also connects these things. Okay, Job 38. And we're going to read just verse 32. He says, do you bring out the constellations in its season? And do you lead the bear with its sons? So there's something about seasons connecting to what's in the sky. Okay, here's a conversation happening within the context of Job where they're bringing some of the things that are happening up in the heavens to bring timing of what's happening down here. Okay? Now, of course, that's part of the argument for some of the calendars that's using these things and how they use them. So what do we have when we're looking at the sky? Well, one of the things we have also is the timing of the declaring of the Rosh Chodesh, or the new moon. So there are those that will look at and say, we declare by the sighted moon, which would be a crescent. There are others that would say we would do it by the calculation of the conjunction. Now, one of the weak arguments is that, well, they couldn't have done the conjunction calculation back in the days when this was happening. Yes, they could. Yes, they could. By the way, I probably shouldn't say that. I'm probably right by saying that, but just in case I'm not, just about every ancient built thing, whether it's Stonehenge, pyramids, any archaeological built thing, had one of its primary purposes, if not its primary purpose, to identify movements of time with that was what was happening in the heavens. Okay? Do your research. Almost any large stone-built ancient thing, whether it's pagan or not, it doesn't matter, was built with the effort to identify movements of time. That was why they were there. And so they had the ability to calculate those things and build these monuments so that at a very specific time, the sun or the light would hit the object in a certain way, in a certain spot, and do something. They were able to calculate that out. So trust me, there wasn't a problem figuring out when a conjunction was. Now, I'm not saying that makes the conjunction the right answer, by the way. I'm just saying that's not an answer to say, well, they couldn't do it, so it's not right. They could. So we have also mixed into these timing issues a very important event that happens in the heavens called the equinoxes. And what do the equinoxes have to do with anything? Well, they have to do with seasons. And when we see the feasts are connected to harvests and the harvests are connected to seasons, so the question then is, well, does the equinoxes have anything to do with anything, or making sure that the feasts fall in certain seasons? Of course, if you live in different parts of the world, the seasons can be very long or very short, whichever way you look at whichever seasons, because there are extremes as you go out towards the poles in terms of how the seasons change, or in places where the seasons don't really change at all because it's always cold or always hot, and you don't feel a change, quote-unquote, of season. But remember, we're dealing with the land of Israel. So what would they have been experiencing when all these things were instructed and where they were? Okay, so then we have the signs of the heavens. That's part of the factors that we're dealing with. So we have seasons, Aviv, and equinox. So if we look at Deuteronomy 16 and verse 1, see how simple this is? It's getting easier by the minute, isn't it? Oh, don't wait. We're not done making this complicated. Let's keep going and adding more. Deuteronomy 16 and verse 1, it says, guard to observe, the word there is shamar, okay? Guard to observe the month of Aviv and perform the Passover to Yahweh your Elohim in the month of Aviv, because it's in the month of Aviv that Yahweh Elohim brought you out of Mitzrayim by night. Ah, there it is. We got to go out and search for barley. Well, it doesn't say that. It says, observe the month called Aviv. It says, it could be, let's give a chance here. It could be that they're saying, go and do these things in the month that you find the Aviv. But let's go back to what was actually happening when the instructions were first given. This comes back to Exodus chapter 12, right? He said, this is the beginning of your moons. Is that not correct? Right? Exodus 12, he said, this is the beginning of your calendar. This is the beginning of your calendar. So let's look at what was happening as we were leading into the beginning of that calendar. Let's look at Exodus chapter 9. Now, there is something called the law of first mention, which tells us that when we first see something mentioned, it tells us a lot about the thing that we're studying. So the first place that we see the word Aviv is in Exodus 9. And in verse 29, it says, and Moses said to him, as soon as I go out of the city, let me spread out my hands to Yahweh. Let the thunder cease and the hail be no more, so that you know that the earth belongs to Yahweh. So we're in the midst of the plagues, and we're just finishing the plague of hail. But as for you and your servants, I know that you do not yet fear Yahweh your Elohim. Excuse me, fear before Yahweh Elohim. And the flax and the barley were smitten before the barley was aviv, or in the head, and the flax was gavol, or in the bloom, or in the bud. So there's two different words being used, gavol and aviv. And by the way, they don't necessarily mean that they have to be completely different ideas. This is just using different ways of saying they were mature enough so they would get destroyed. So they were mature enough so they would be destroyed, where it says, then the wheat and spelt were not smitten because they were late crops. So they hadn't come up to the point where they could get destroyed. But these were mature enough, whatever that meant, in terms of aviv and Gavol, so they were destroyed. They were in the bloom. They were in the bud. They were in the head, whatever that meant. Now, let's understand something. They were told that they're guarding the month of Aviv because it was in this month of Aviv that they came out. Isn't that what we read? Because it's in the month of Aviv that they came out. Okay, so we just read in the hail that the barley, which is really the main crop that they're looking for being Aviv, was destroyed. But if that's not enough, go to chapter 10 and verse 12. Chapter 10 and verse 12, it says, and Yahweh said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the land of Mitzrayim for the locusts to come upon the land of Mitzrayim and eat every plant of the land, all that the hail has left. So I want all the Aviv people, I don't want to mock anybody, to make sure they can explain to anybody when they're making their case or argument that they're supposed to build their calendar based on finding barley that's a certain ripeness. I want you to explain to me what barley was ripe in Aviv when they left Egypt. What did they leave a whole year later? Because as far as I can tell, that from the time this is happening in chapter 9 until we get to chapter 12, I'm not sure how much period of time that was, but in my opinion, it wasn't that long. And if it wasn't that long, there wasn't anything that they could go look at that was green. Can we agree? Otherwise, you'd need a whole nother year cycle to get to it. Because the locusts and the hail destroyed all of it. And so, is that really the way we should be timing things? Could it also be, now I want to put something down here, this is important, all right? Generally speaking, would you go up to a person who is native to a language and tell them that they don't know their own language? In other words, let's say you met somebody from, I don't know, from Italy, from France, from, it doesn't matter what country, from China, Japan, from South America, where they may be speaking Portuguese or speaking Spanish. Would you go up to the person who is native born to a language and tell them they don't understand their language and what the words mean? Would you go ahead and correct them on the definition of the words that they use? Would any of you? See, but this is what we do in our arrogance. Most of you, when I say most, I mean like most, were not raised with Hebrew. You just weren't. It's not your native tongue. You weren't raised speaking it and understanding it. Yet we're going to tell the Jewish community that Aviv doesn't mean spring. But if you look up in a Hebrew dictionary, it means spring. If you talk to a Jew and it talks about the month of Aviv, it says it means the month of spring. The month when we turn into spring. The month of spring. And so he says, it was in the spring that I brought you out of Egypt. Not because there was this whole big deal about barley being a certain level of growth. So that's really an interesting piece that we need to bring in here again. Because in our arrogance, we think that the native speaker of the tongue doesn't know his language as much as we might know it in our understanding it for 5 minutes using a blue letter Bible or interlinear or some other thing, so we think we're so smart. Yes, Aviv is a state of barley or flax or a state of growth, but it's also spring. It's like when it says between the evenings, which causes everybody all kinds of arguing over when Passover should be. When the Jewish community tells you it means in the afternoon. Oh, no, no, it doesn't mean that. Well, the native born is telling you that it means afternoon. Why do we think we're smarter than them when they say it means afternoon? Aviv is being used here to mean spring. So hopefully we can start to understand that. Because that's an important piece of our figuring out how to handle the calendar is to get all of our arrogance and thinking we're so smart out of the mix. So here we see that the barley was gone, the flax was gone, the locusts ate anything that was left, so there was nothing, okay? So that should be a factor in all of this. So when we, then the equinox people will come in and say, look, if we utilize the equinox in our timing of the first moon of the year, then we can be sure that the harvest will be ready and we can be sure that it's in spring. So might that not be a better way to do it, is include the equinox into the mix? And there are several of the calendar derivations that do that. I'm not saying that's the right one. Again, we're not here to prove what's right. But I'm showing that every calendar is going to be picked on to some degree because they all have flaws. Okay, they all have flaws. Now, here's a factor that almost nobody brings in. Deuteronomy 17. Now, by the way, just so I can be official here, I want to do full disclosure. In 1998, 9, 2000, 2001, 2002, etc., when I was first in ministry officially with congregations in Knoxville, Tennessee, okay, I mean like as in terms of full-time official ministry, I did have an opinion on the calendar. I did teach a very specific calendar. I did do all the research because everybody says, oh, well, you know, Rabbi, if you would just do that, I did all the research, trust me. Whatever you did, I put in those thousands of hours too. But there was a factor that everybody seemed to be ignoring or have missed that I'm going to share with you that I think is important. Deuteronomy 17. By the way, have you all heard me mention when putting the scriptures together, it's vital that you don't leave any pieces of the puzzle in the box. Remember we've talked about that in other teachings? Well, here's a vital piece of the puzzle that in Deuteronomy chapter 16, I'm sorry, did I say 17? I meant 16. In chapter 16, that everybody leaves out, and I've challenged some of the calendar people on this. I remember challenging the 119 guys on this and some other people on this and say, look, does your calendar handle this verse? Listen to this verse in verse 13. You are to perform Sukkot for 7 days, and you're to do it after the ingathering from your threshing floor and from your wine press. In other words, you're not going to Sukkot till you finish processing your harvest. So now here's the question. What were they harvesting in ancient times in Israel? Because some of the stuff they harvest now was not native to Israel. They brought it in. What were they harvesting in Israel in those days? And would it be done, harvested, and finished and put away in time for Sukkot based on whatever calendar you're choosing? You see, because some of the calendars have Sukkot in mid-September. I remember this happening in 1999 or 2000. And I contacted, now you have to understand, I come from a commodity trading background. At some point, that was something I did. And I know that that means that crops are part of what people trade when they trade commodities. And crops have a somewhat predictable harvest cycle. You know when you're planting them. You know when they're coming up. You know when you're harvesting them. Doesn't all of a sudden surprise you. Oh, look, it's there, you know. You kind of know exactly how to plan your life around when it's going to be there. Now, depending on the rain, it could take maybe a day or two, a week longer, a little shorter, how things grow. But you kind of know when it's going to be. So I contacted people that I knew in Israel and said, look, is there like an almanac or something that they have in Israel that can kind of look back and say, typically, when did these harvests come in? And then I found someone had published a book, and I have copies of the articles from that book, that was just dealing with, for whatever reason, agriculture in ancient Mesopotamia and in the Middle East and all those kinds, like what was the harvest like, what crops were growing, had a nice little chart that said, these are when these things were harvested and these are the different types of, you know, whether it was wine, you know, grapes or figs or barley or wheat, etc. And I can tell you right now that there is absolutely no way that the harvest was done, processed, threshed. That's what it says here. You have to do it after the ingathering from the threshing floor and from your wine presses. There's absolutely no way that was finished by mid-September. No way. So your calendar has to work that out if you're insisting on doing your calendar. And by the way, I did actually get some people in Israel sent me a copy of an article, cover of the newspaper, in the middle of Sukkot, and it said something about, we are just having this great crop and we're in the middle of our harvest and everything's going great. In the middle of Sukkot. Cover story in Israel, one of those years. So clearly they hadn't threshed and finished their processing. They're just still getting it out of the fields. This was one of those years when it was in the middle of September. So what do we do with that? And by the way, some of you are thinking, oh man, I never even thought of that one. Most people haven't. But when that verse hit me, when we're doing the Torah portion, by the way, that's why you should do the Torah portions every year. Because you will see verses that he will use to hit you that you've read 75 times, but you need it. It's like that missing piece of the puzzle that was hidden in the box. You know, I don't know about you, I'm a little weird this way, but I like to do jigsaw puzzles, okay? And if I can't find a piece right away, I'll walk away, but I'll walk by that puzzle later, see that piece will just jump out at me. I'll go, wow, there it is, pick it up, put it in. That's what it's like when you find that verse that you were missing. Okay? When you find that verse that you were missing. So we need a calendar, at least that's what it seems like, that should make sure that we're going to finish our threshing and our wine pressing. Would we agree? Because do you think that generally speaking, any of you ever dealt with crops or anything? Well, even if you haven't, you probably could figure this out. If you left to go keep Sukkot, and the harvest wasn't finished, was there going to be much left when you got back? No, you don't walk away from harvest. You got to get that in, and you got to get it put away and processed right, or it's going to be ruined. So your Father in the heavens knows that. He wants you to go celebrate the abundance of your harvest and bring a tithe of it even with you. You can't do that unless you're finished, can you? Okay. So we have that to factor in. And then we have something, the last piece of the puzzle that I want to add to this for right now is Deuteronomy 17. Deuteronomy 17 in verse 8 says, when any matter arises, which is too hard for you to judge, you mean like the calendar? Between blood and blood, plea and plea, stroke and stroke, matters of strife within your gates. The calendar certainly is a matter of strife within our gates. Then you shall rise up and go where? To the place Yahweh chooses, and shall come to the leadership at that time, the priest, the Levites, the judge who is in those days, and shall inquire. And they shall declare to you the word of right ruling, and you shall do according to the word which they declare to you from that place which Yahweh chooses, and you shall guard to do according to all that they instruct you. Do according to the Torah in which they teach you, according to the right ruling which they say to you. You do not turn to the right or to the left from the word which they declare to you. And the man who acts arrogantly as to not to listen to the priest who stands to serve before there before Yahweh or Elohim, or to the judge, that man shall die. So shall you purge the evil from Israel, and let all the people hear and fear, and let no longer be doing arrogantly. Okay. So here's the last piece of the puzzle I want to stick in there. Hillel II, who was a 4th century Nasi of the Sanhedrin. Nasi means president or the presiding head of the Sanhedrin. In around 350-something, you know, in the 4th century, Hillel, the Nasi of the Sanhedrin, put a calendar together. At least it's accorded to him that it was his calendar, but he's the one that made the decision anyway, to put a calendar in place to be used by those in the diaspora, to be used by those not in the land. And this calendar is called the Hillel II calendar. That's not to be confused with Hillel from, like, you know, around Yeshua's day in there, the Hillel Shammai battle. This is Hillel II. And this calendar is still used today by the Jewish community. This Hillel II calendar. Now, understand, this was an appointed body. They were an official body. They were called the Sanhedrin. He was the head. They made a decision. The decision was for to have something to be used by those in dispersion. Where are we? We're in dispersion. We're in the diaspora. So it was intended for this calendar to be used by us where we are right now. So now we have to be careful and say, how much weight do we give? Remember, we looked at signs in the heavens. We looked at all these other factors, right? Crops and barley and all these other things. Well, also, how much weight do we give that this official body put this particular calendar in place for us? So what would it take to change that? In other words, if there is a state law and they want to change that law, there's a process to do that. Can anybody just come in and change the state law or federal law or city law? No, there has to be a proper process by a proper official body to go through that process to change something. So what makes us think that are we being arrogant here? That we have the right to go against what Hillel II put in place? Oh, well, I'm not bowing down to those Jews, blah, blah, blah. What part of Deuteronomy 17 do you actually accept as being valid for you? I'm not saying that it's valid or not in this particular case, but I'm just curious if you value Deuteronomy 17 on any level at all. By the way, this also goes to, it says, when you go to the leadership in the place where Yahweh chooses, well, he's chosen leadership here, and he's chosen for you to be here right now. He dispersed you, which means you should also be worrying about doing Deuteronomy 17 with your local leadership now. So this comes back to where we're going to get to in making this calendar decision. So taking all of these factors into account, MTOI has chosen to use the Hillel II calendar for our scheduling of the observances of the appointed times. That's an MTOI decision. I made that decision. We did have counsel. Just in case anybody wants to see who else he can kind of try to leverage to get me to change my mind, I'm the Nasi of this organization. The burden of responsibility was on me. I made the decision. But I made it after having meetings with the leadership at the time to discuss what all of the things I just shared, we discussed all of that. And by the way, when we had that meeting, we probably had 6 or 7 of us at that meeting. This goes back a few years. And at that meeting, we had almost every possible calendar was represented. We had Crescent people, Conjunction people, Aviv people, Equinox people, local time, Jerusalem time, all of that stuff. But we had to say is this, how can the body, remember Yeshua, we talked about this in the unity teaching. Yeshua's prayer was, Abba, may they be one as we are one. We can't even agree the same day to meet together. How are we supposed to be one? How is that supposed to happen? Let's understand this, okay? This decision has us celebrating in unity with, listen now, the Jewish community, Judah, because they all use Hillel II. The worldwide Jewish community is using Hillel II's calendar. We are, if we do this calendar, we're also going to be in unity with most of Messianic Judaism. Okay, almost all the Messianic Jewish congregations identify themselves that way, use the Hillel II calendar. That would be guys like the MJAA, UMJC, all the big organizations, the Messianic Jewish community. Most of Messianic Israel, which I think we identify as part of, uses the Hillel II calendar. And also, most of the world, both Christian and non-believing, are familiar with the feast being kept using the calendar, about the Hillel calendar, because this is what's on the secular calendars. If you go to the store and buy a calendar, just go to Office Depot, Staples, wherever, you buy a calendar, Walmart, doesn't matter, you will find Passover, you will find Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, etc., on that calendar, according to what? The Hillel calendar, the Hillel the second calendar dates. You will have that. By the way, you also live in a world, and I'm not saying we should do this for convenience, but Abba also knew you'd be living in a world where we'd have jobs and other things that we'd have to deal with, which is also interacting with secular people that are going to be running those businesses and jobs. And so it's going to be a real tough call to go to your boss and say, I'm going to need some time off in April, but I got to wait till they sight the new moon. Or I'm going to need time off for trumpets, but I got to wait till they sight the new moon. So I'm not going to know if it's going to be Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. It's going to depend. It's going to be a little tough to plan out your life and your days off. So I'm not saying that the convenience is a main factor, but it's certainly a factor saying that, hey, this is a part of this. Because it's also going to be tough when you say to your boss, I need off for Sukkot, and Sukkot, according to the Jews in his office, is 1 week, and you're doing it another week or another month. Because some calendars have us a month different than the Hillel calendar. A month. That's tough. That's challenging. How do you make that argument with your boss? Now, he already thought you were weird. Now you're really weird. Because part of being weird, he thought you were just a wannabe Jew of some sort. Now you're like not even matching up with them. By the way, one of the reasons why I picked this calendar is because, and this is sort of one of those no-brainers, everybody always laughs when I say it, but I picked this calendar because this way nobody wins. The Aviv guys don't win. The Equinox guys don't win. The Crescent Conjunction guys don't win. So this way, nobody could say, well, why'd you pick their calendar? So I picked the one nobody wanted. There's a logic to that. There's some sort of brilliance to that. But that's really not why I picked it. That's just sort of the wise guy thing. But we picked it because of all of these factors. We're in the wilderness. We're in the dispersion. And I have to ask the question is, why has there been such a struggle? Why has he allowed us to be in the struggle? And I think it's because he's waiting for us to see what kind of wisdom we can apply in this kind of confusion. Look, this decision also makes spiritual sense in that it will provide a more stable and shalom-filled environment in which we all can learn to walk out the Torah and celebrate the Moedim, the feasts. Without this major distraction, it's our hope that the people will shift their focus to weightier subjects of Torah observance and the fruit of the Spirit and the belief in Yeshua. Because they're so distracted by things like the calendar. By the way, I have rarely run into a calendar-focused person who can talk about it and maintain their fruit of the Spirit. They will not be gentle, kind, meek, etc., patient. You know, they're just not going to be able to do it. And so I think this makes spiritual sense. So why all the struggle and strife? Many are not even aware that there is an issue and are surprised to discover it is causing so much strife. Many have invested a tremendous amount of time studying this out with the desire to be right. Some are struggling with Gnosticism, this whole seeking after knowledge thing. Some are addicted to what I call new doctrinal understanding crack. And so first thing they do is realize, well, maybe the Aviv is important. Then the next thing you know, they're going into other extrapolations and they're on the Enochian calendar and this other calendar. And we'll cover all of that at some point. See, but again, it's not my opportunity here to mock or ridicule another calendar, because I have one that I prefer. I do. I mean, if you study this out, you'll come to some conclusion that you prefer. And I used to impose it because I was the head at the time and I could do that. But by the way, I didn't see that bear very good fruit either. And so we have people that are really, and it's not just the calendar. They start getting really addicted to this, what we call new doctrinal understanding crack. By the way, you can find crack dealers all over YouTube. Go to conferences. There's no lack of finding that stuff. There's whole channels now, I won't name their names, and some of you know what I'm talking about, that's all they focus on is offering new doctrinal understanding crack. And they'll bring in teacher after teacher that can offer you new, weirder, extreme stuff all the time, including a channel that used to have me on there and kicked me off. That's as far as I'll go. Because I wasn't going to peddle crack. We're just going to talk the scripture straightforward. That's it. We don't need to go into that weird fringe stuff. Some are overly susceptible to the influences of others. So some of you really don't have an issue with this, except that you're susceptible that others who are so serious about it can impose their will on you. And that's part of why we have such a problem. Because those people that are so serious about it and really adamant about it, they will seek after those who they can influence and get onto their side. So we have to be careful with that. Some feel they need to influence others and set them straight. So those who feel like they need to influence others and set straight, go and find the ones that are overly susceptible to being influenced. And that's a perfect storm right there. Many have become emotionally invested in the issue, and that is when the bad fruit starts to manifest. We talked about that a few minutes earlier. We said that that's when you start to identify yourself in a position. I remember being at a conference. No, it was at a Sukkot. And I was a guest speaker, and I got there right before supper, and I got to sit down and eat with some folks because I was going to be teaching after supper, and it was at a campsite, and I was there with, they had the fire, and they cooked up some food, and I sat down, and I could hear a person from across the fire sort of yell out to me, so where do you stand on the calendar? And of course, I knew the trap that was being set, because it wasn't the first rodeo for me with that kind of stuff. And because what happens is when a speaker comes to a place, the people generally will grab that person to try to see if that person agrees with them so they could tell everybody, well, you know, the speaker, he agreed with me, you know. Arrogance. Why do you need anybody to agree with you? Have your own integrity. You don't need people to agree with you. But you also need to understand where to find balance and unity in other things and come up under a covering. But you don't need people to agree with you. Remember we talked about selfless in the developing the character of Yeshua. A selfless person does not need to be right, doesn't need others to endorse that they're right, doesn't need anybody to agree with them. So if we're going to get to be selfless, we got to get there. So anyway, so this person threw that out at me. So I said, if you want to know the truth, I think you're all wrong. This person literally jumped out of their chair and stood up. They got all bowed up. I said, look at you. This is why you're wrong. Because you can't even talk about this without jumping out of your chair. That didn't make it any better. He got even more mad at me. This is the problem with the lack of maturity in the body. We're just not getting there. Each side thinks the other sides are unstudied idiots. We talked about that already, okay? Now, here's what I want to really kind of bring out. Why are we dealing with all these problems? Because all claim to be led by the Ruach. Everybody feels like the Ruach led them to that teaching, led them to that understanding. Here's the problem, though. Is the Ruach HaKodesh divided? Confused? Having a bad hair day? I mean, what's going on with the Ruach? The Ruach HaKodesh could not be telling so many different people so many different things. But each one is claiming that the Ruach revealed this to them. Okay, so the Ruach revealed to you the Aviv, Crescent, Jerusalem time, whatever, but revealed to you the conjunction, local time, equinox, whatever. Really? So the Ruach revealed those completely different things to both of you. Well, some spirit might have done it, and probably the spirit in man. Well, you got all convinced in your own head. So this begs the question, has the Ruach been saying anything at this time that we have interpreted correctly? Or is the Ruach trying to get our attention to say, I've allowed this to be a mess so we can see what you do with the mess? How do you handle something that's basically entrenched and people that are in intractable positions? They will not budge. So what do you do? What do you do? The fruit is evidence that the Ruach has not been involved in so many things here, because when a strong endorsement of a particular view of the calendar is made by anybody, what do you find? Division, strife, and polarization. That's not the fruit of the Spirit. That's not the fruit of the Ruach. All of this is coming from those who call themselves mature in the faith. If we are mature, we should have recognized by now that we are all subject to the same logical, emotional, and spiritual weaknesses as anyone else, even when our motivation is the pursuit of truth. Did you catch that? He says, if we are mature, we should have recognized by now that we are all subject to the same logic, emotional, spiritual weaknesses as anyone else, even when our motivation is correct. It's the pursuit of truth. So where then is the fruit of the Spirit? Where's the love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, trustworthiness, gentleness, and self-control? Where is all that in all this? I don't see it. Remember what I said a little earlier. If we go with Hillel the Second, we have a shot at bringing some shalom and stability back into the body. We're also going to be in line with Deuteronomy 17. We're also going to be in line with our Jewish brothers. We're also going to be in line with our Messianic Jewish brothers. That brings unity instantaneously. I believe that Yahweh is fully in control and has allowed this for a reason. I believe that he is looking to see how we handle this and if we will use wisdom in making this decision. I call it, he's waiting for us to make what I call a wilderness wisdom decision. That was easy for me to say. A wilderness wisdom decision. We're in the wilderness. What kind of wisdom will we apply to this decision? I mean, so what about unity? Should we not be striving for unity? Can this be done without compromising the truth? Because most of the people who argue will say, oh, I can't compromise. I'll lose my integrity. I'm not asking you to lose your integrity. If you really believe with full integrity your calendar position, keep your calendar, come with the rest of the body on Hillel the Second anyway for unity. If your day's a day earlier or a day later than what everybody else is doing, do both. That's your integrity. But where's the unity going to be without that? So as to where we go from here, there may be wisdom in having some of Shaul's words to guide us. So let's look at some of the words of Rav Shaul. We'll go to Colossians chapter 2. Colossians chapter 2 and verse 16. Let no one therefore judge you in eating or in drinking or respect of a festival or new moon or Sabbath, which are a shadow of what is to come, but the body of the Messiah. So what is it talking about here? When it comes to Torah observance, let no one judge you except those with the authority to do so in the body, Deuteronomy 17. Shaul understood Deuteronomy 17. I believe he would have instructed the Colossians about this thing. And he's saying, stop judging each other. Stop letting your friends and family judge you. All judgment about eating, drinking, and Sabbaths and new moons, etc., has got to come from proper Torah authority. He's not saying the body gets to just do whatever the body gets to do. The body has structure, and in that structure, there are those who have the authority to make decisions and judgments. And so let's understand that Colossians fits right into all of this. But of course, if you're reading this as a mainstream Christian who never really read Deuteronomy that much, you would not understand that the context of what he's saying would have to be that body of Messiah is Torah observant body of Messiah means the Deuteronomy 17 is in play. Can we agree? Okay, so the Colossians would have to have understood that. Now let's continue. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 1. I call upon you, therefore, I, the prisoner of the Master, to walk worthily of the calling with which you were called. Okay, so now he's going to tell us what that looks like. With all humility and meekness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, being eager to guard the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. Okay, guarding the spirit of unity one body, one spirit, as you were also called into one expectation of your calling. See, this is what he's talking about. He said, we need to be walking worthy of the calling. And what he says that looks like is humility, meekness, patience. What is that? The fruit of the Spirit. Bearing with one another, being eager to guard the unity. We seem eager to defend our calendar position. We don't seem very eager to guard the unity, which is why I wanted to do this teaching after the teaching on unity and division. We just don't seem to be that eager to guard unity. Let's go to Romans chapter 14. I want to read one verse here and then we'll wrap it up. Romans chapter 14 and verse 19. So then, let us pursue the matters of peace and the matters for building up one another. This is what you need to be pursuing. See, unity is going to come from two places. It's going to come from eliminating most of, if not all of, the causes of division, but it's also something we need to pursue. To pursue it. He says in verse 19, so then let us pursue peace and the building up of one another. This is the key. This is the key to all of this. So let's go before the Father. Father, we have gone through this study and we've come to realize the calendar is, and you have allowed it to be, a somewhat complicated matter, although for some they think it's very simplistic and straightforward, but it appears to me anyway that there's a lot of factors here. And Father, it also, we didn't mention this during the teaching, but we'll mention it here in the prayer. We also notice, Father, that you allowed Israel in their wilderness called Egypt to lose contact with the calendar, and then you yourself, through the anointed leadership of Moshe, reestablished that calendar. You reset it for them. You set that calendar for them. And so, Father, I think it's only logical that we would come to the conclusion and believe that we in our wilderness walk now, who have lost touch with your correct calendar, will have you again there through leadership at the right time to reestablish that calendar. And the timing in Exodus was right before you took them out. And I'm going to guess that that would be the same timing now, is right before you take us out, you will reset that calendar, or Yeshua will do it upon his return. And so, Father, help us to have shalom in this calendar issue. Help us to study out how we should go about making the decision rather than focusing on the decision itself. What is the right approach to making the right decision? What factors should be going into making the right decision as opposed to trying to figure out which is the right calendar? Because I think all of us, if we studied it out and studied the other sides, we'd realize we've missed a few pieces in our particular way of looking at it. And so, Father, help us to find the fruit. Help us to really submit to the leading of the Ruach so that we might have restored to us the love and joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, trustworthiness, gentleness, and self-control. Father, that we might find unity in the body, and that, Father, then we could be doing what's well-pleasing in your sight and walk worthily of our calling. So, Father, we need your help because we are still fleshly. Because Rav Shul had talked about, are you not still fleshly because there's strife amongst you? When we strive and we have conflict and we have division, we absolutely are still fleshly. Help us to deal with that flesh, to put to death that flesh, so that we might live in the Spirit, that we might walk in the fullness of your intent, and that we may find peace, shalom, unity, and to be found to be doing what's pleasing in your sight. So, Father, we need your help in all this. We submit ourselves to you, thanking you, praising you, and submitting ourselves to you in the authority of our coming King, our Messiah, Yeshua. It's in his name we pray. Amen. Amen.